It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, I'm telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot. He might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility. You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Try again.
The Medium Fundamental.
Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. Matt is at the Seeds of Peace Camp with Brian Scalabrini, which means the meeting of the gingers as they come together as one. It must be a special event. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. Appreciate joining us for the program. Probably the best moment for the Celtics this year came on the basketball court, but away from the public eye. And Brian Scalabrini was training for the Big Three tournament, which has not gone all that well. We could talk about that or not talk about that, but we'll move that to the backdrop here for a second. And he was at the Celtics practice facility, and the Celtics had just wrapped up their practice. They're putting up shots, and they went to the wayside. We're doing some interviews, and Scal stepped out on the court, and a couple of media guys decided they're going to take on Brian Scalabrini, including a cameraman who was a little bit overweight. And at first, the cameraman looked like he was going to have some success. He drove hard to the basket. He laid it in. He was leading Scal, depending on how you're scoring, 2-0. And then everybody like stopped everything they were doing to watch this. And then, you know, Scal kind of destroyed him until the cameraman nearly had a heart attack about 6 points into the game, and they called it. So that was probably one of the best moments of the year that no one knows about that took place with Brian Scalabrini.
Hey, a lot of training goes into preparing for an event like the Big Three, right?
Indeed. You got anybody who will play, cameramen, cheerleaders, whoever's going to take is going to provide some competition for you. You have to take that chance when you get it. What is the Seeds of Peace Camp?
It's a summer camp in the backwoods of Maine. I had to explain to Scal the lingo up here in northern New England. It's not in the forest of Maine, the woods.
Right.
We don't say forest, we say woods. He was unaware of that.
That's like a Midwest thing, the woods. I mean, the forest.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Well, he's from the West Coast, so.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But anyways, they bring in kids from a lot of countries of conflict, most notably Israeli Jewish kids and Palestinian Muslim kids, as well as a bunch of other countries around the Middle East, and bring them all together and put them in this, you know, classic summer camp setting on Pleasant Lake in Maine, and forge relationships, friendships, break down barriers, cultural barriers through summer camp, through sport, campfires, and you know, every swimming, everything that goes with that. And it's really a inspiring organization, because these are kids who were probably culturally raised to not trust, even dislike, people from neighboring countries and cultures, and now all of a sudden they're bunking with them for 3 weeks and doing arts and crafts with them and playing soccer with them and going kayaking with them, whatever they're doing. And through this process, they break down those barriers, and the goal is they try to identify kids, and it's not young kids, you know, teenagers,
right,
who are identified as future leaders of their countries, of their cultures, and bring them together so that as they move forward in their education and become leaders, they remember the human side of things and can apply that moving forward in how they deal with in relationships and teaching when dealing with other cultures that historically they've had conflict with.
They should do it with the parents as well, and the adults, the leaders of the country, even Congress. Have a Congress come together and have a camp like this.
You're right, but as you know, it's kids are way more impressionable.
That's true.
Than old hardened politicians.
There would be, yeah, for sure. You know, that would be a fabulous, like, reality TV series. I don't know, to have that type of thing exist. Even with it, even if it was, you know, if kids or even older adults, like have a group of, this probably has been done already, and if not, you should get on it. I'm an ideas guy, Matt, but my follow through is pretty weak. So I'm going to rely on you. You have perhaps more time than I do. But
I'll take it to Shark Tank.
Right. So have a show where, you know, you have individuals like a Trump supporter and, you know, somebody who is kind of the opposite of that, and then have like, you know, as you mentioned, the Israelis and the Palestinians, and have all these people together and confront their conflicts. And this is like,
see, I'm not, you know what, that's American culture to try to create a reality show out of something that's trying to be positive and beneficial to society, Chris. I can't roll with that.
Oh, well, I thought it was that's better. Isn't that better than having, you know, just like created conflicts like at the Real World House? I thought I was doing something. I was combining American culture with doing something positive.
No. Then you're messing it up. We all know reality shows are scripted anyway.
And this one probably would be too. I'm just going to throw it out there. No, of course it wouldn't be scripted. Just like this show, no one knows. I have no idea what's going to happen. It would be real, man. I would not have. There would be nothing that would be scripted about this show. It would be. That's the beauty of it. Would be the reality, the tears, the hardships. And if there were no tears or hardships, then we have problems, and then we start scripting things. But until then, real. No, but all right. I appreciate your pushback on this. That's what problem solving and ideas are all about. I mean, there has to be somebody who says no to great ideas, and then you find somebody else who likes your idea.
I think only you think that was a great idea, but I'll take anyone else. Are the phone lines lighting up?
Yeah, let's take Dave from Hopkinton. Dave, you're on the... of course, that is Matt's dad. And this is The Life of Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. So we're going to break the show up into three very succinct parts today. The first part is this one. The second part is going to be the Red Sox. Jackie Bradley Jr. joins us on the show. Red Sox and Yankees. Didi Gregorius, Yankees shortstop, and also Yankees reliever Dellin Betances in that segment of the program. Then there were two big sports events in New Hampshire since the last time we spoke. One was the race at Hampshire Motor Speedway in Loudoun yesterday. We'll hear from Denny Hamlin, who I interviewed in Victory Lane, and also the Eastern League All-Star Game as well, with baseball's future stars coming to Manchester. So that's in the final segment of the program. But now it's time for some basketball chatter here on the program. And since we last spoke, the Celtics have made some moves. They've said hello to some folks. They've said goodbye to some others. Here we sit in mid-July, and you know, where do the Celtics, in your view, fit into the landscape of the NBA after their moves?
Well, they obviously got better in signing Gordon Hayward, as well as their draft picks. Their young guys look pretty good in the summer league as well. So, I mean, I think you know, getting Hayward definitely saved their offseason as far as satisfying the pundits like yourself.
I am not satisfied, for the record, not satisfied yet.
A little bit, though. Imagine if they didn't get Hayward, is all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. They
then people would really be clamoring.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, they definitely made some upgrades. Their young guys are developing, which is a great sign for an organization's stability and consistency and culture when you can organically grow talent like that over the long term. So I think they're looking all right. You know, are they going to be able to surpass the Cleveland Cavs in the Eastern Conference? Remains to be seen. I think everybody's chasing the Warriors.
Yeah.
They're going to be as good as ever next year again, you know, assuming they don't get injured. They got to be beyond heavy favorites to win the championship again.
So, you know, I think the Celtics are better. I think you're 100% right. They're better. But I still think they're well behind where the Cavaliers are at. And I think that, obviously, when you bring quality guys in, at times you have to lose guys. And the Celtics lost some, you know, significant figures. I still have questions about their rebounding. I like the Aaron Baines signing, as I'm sure.
Baines-y. That's
sure,
my boy.
Sure you do as well.
I already talked to him. I'm like, he's like, yo, mate, New Hampshire, you always talk about how beautiful New Hampshire is, mate. We'll have to get up get up there. That's my Australian accent.
That's pretty good. I wasn't sure if that was Patty Mills or Aaron Baines, but it was apparently it was Aaron Baines, I guess. Did Patty sign with anybody yet?
I know. I'll tell you what. Baines is a huge barbecue fan.
Yeah, so I heard that.
I told him about Smoke Show in Concord. We'll see if he makes an appearance.
Well, you'll have to let me know when that happens. Did Patty Mills sign with anybody yet?
It was reported that he's re-signing with the Spurs.
Okay.
So
that's we don't know that.
That was reported.
Reported.
Neither confirm nor deny if that is actually true.
Right.
But I have my fingers crossed.
See, that's the impromptu nature of the show right there. I mean, that wasn't a part of the script. I veered off the script and was able to get a real question and response in. So yep. I liked the Bainesy move. Marcus Morris, the trade for Avery Bradley. Avery's kind of my guy. I love Avery. And you talked about the fact that, you want to see your young players grow and so forth. And, seeing him grow each and every year, and I think that he is on the cusp of being an all-star in the NBA, and I think he will be an all-star with the Detroit Pistons. And, you perhaps want to see a little bit more in return, and Marcus Morris is a good player. Does he address the Celtics' need in regards to rebounding? I don't think so. But you weren't going to be able to re-sign Bradley and Isaiah Thomas most likely. So that makes some sense, but still when you look at, and obviously Kelly Olynyk leaving as well, did the Celtics get better by drafting Jason
and
Tatum?
Your boy, Jarebko.
Oh yeah. That was a sad moment, but, I saw it coming. I've been able to deal with it. The other thing is, Cal, as I mentioned before, I mean, have the Celtics made that much of a net gain to me? And I think that still needs to kind of play out during the, I'm taking a wait and see approach to, the Celtics in the regular season. Do I think Gordon Hayward is a really good player? Yeah, but he's an all-star once. I think he's going to help them, but they lost a lot. In other words, they lost.
Yeah, but they don't need, that's what they need. They don't need the 30-point a game guy. They got that, Isaiah Thomas. They need, the guy who can, I don't know how to explain it. Like with the Spurs in their prime, they had Timmy was like the 25 a night guy, and then you had two really good players in Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili who could go for 30. Every now and then.
I'll go further back.
They were very consistent, and you could run plays for them to get buckets. It gave you another option, another go-to person if the need arises. You know what I mean?
Gordon Hayward is more Sean Elliott than, any of the more recent Spurs guys. I'd see him as like Sean Elliott David Robinson.
Gordon Hayward, no. Gordon Hayward can take it to the rack better than you think.
No, I think he can. I just meant in terms of his not in terms of his overall game, but in terms of his impact, where he's going to be a guy who's all-star at that all-star level, but he is going to be a secondary, type guy. Where Manu is, it's difficult to compare anybody to Manu's impact. It's not necessarily that of scoring, but I think that it's on paper it's a step forward, but. Losing Avery Bradley is significant, and he's one of the best defensive players in the league. And averaged 17 points a game last year. Obviously, he's dealt with some injury issues.
I'm not arguing with that. I think Hayward's pretty good. That's all.
No, I think he is too. And he and Brad obviously are a good fit. The Celtics should be better as a result of the move. The question is, how much better are they, and are they near where the Cavs are? And I think I think it's this kind of the same deal you referenced with everybody in the Warriors. I think that they are close to where the Cavs are if one of the Cavs gets injured or two of the Cavs get injured. And the question though is, and everyone has said the Celtics are shooting for 2 years down the road or 3 years down the road, and that's going to be their time. And I think that's dangerous because you look at Hayward and Horford and Isaiah, and everybody's around 30 years of age, and once you start to drift into that 30, 31, 32, 33...
Hey, the Spurs did it. It's not out of the question.
It's not out of the question, but, you also don't know what other teams are going to do and how they're going to reload. And I think Danny Ainge has done a real good job of putting them in competitive balance.
I think if you look at the Eastern Conference, and I'm not trying to downplay the East, but you look at the power imbalance that's existed for years, and if you look at free agent movement and trades that went down this offseason, you could argue it's going to be even more of a disparity next year and moving forward, that if you can peak in 2 or 3 years, the Cavs are going to be even older than you are going to be. And then you can argue that's your chance to pounce and take the East. So if big picture wise, I don't think that's such an outrageous thing to plan for.
But I mean, can we say with any certainty that LeBron James at 37 or 38 is still not going to be, you know, dominant?
How many 37 or 38 year olds have been dominant? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar maybe? I don't think even Jordan, what was he, like 36 when he retired, right?
30, the first time.
36?
He was 36 when he retired.
No. The second time, how old was he?
He was like 40. With the
No, he wasn't. He was 40 when he was on the Wizards.
Right. That's the second. That's the third time.
I meant the second time, not the third
right.
time.
Right. Yeah.
Like after he won the championship.
Right, in 98.
98? Yeah,
98.
So, I mean, and LeBron's obviously proven he's an exception to almost every biology law that has existed thus far. But I mean, at some point, the Cavs are going to get older, and LeBron's going to get older, and start to slow down. You're right; it's a matter of when. And if you can time it so that when he starts to slow down, your team's peaking, the East is there for the taking.
Right, but that's even LeBron's 34 next year. Obviously, 35 and 19, and then 36 and 20. So. You know, even worse, it's still a ways from getting that far, that far out.
He's got a lot of miles, though.
He does. He has. He's played in this league since he was 18 years of age, and he's been, he's been taking as much of a beating as anybody over that time. But I don't think we've ever seen a physical specimen like LeBron either. The natural laws would indicate that, yes, he is going to slow down at 36 or 37, and provide opportunity for the Celtics in 19 or 20. But again, that's assuming that the laws of nature apply to LeBron James, and I'm not sure they do.
Right.
All right. As always, Matt, appreciate you joining us for the program.
All right. Thanks for having me.
That is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics, with the Matt Bonner portion of the show. You're not going to miss the middle segment of the program. Jackie Bradley Jr., Red Sox center fielder, joins us, as does Yankees all-star Dylan Betances and shortstop Didi Gregorius. And then we're headed to New Hampshire Motor Speedway in Loudoun for some interviews there, and also down to Manchester where the Fisher Cats hosted the Eastwing All-Star Game. You're listening to Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
Presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am inside Fenway Park. This segment of the program presented by Revision Energy. Well, as the Red Sox begin this week, they sit with a record of 52-41. Which, believe it or not, is the second best in the American League, despite only 11 games over 500. They've lost 6 of 10. They're coming off a split against the Yankees. They lead the American League East by the Tampa Bay Rays by 3 games over the Yankees by 3.5 as the Toronto Blue Jays come in, and then the Red Sox head out on a West Coast swing. The big story for the Red Sox this year has been their pitching. Both relief pitching and starting pitching have gotten the Red Sox to this point. The offense has been not where really a lot of people had expected this year, but perhaps people should have, given the fact that the Red Sox saw the retirement of David Ortiz in the offseason. Chris Sale has been unbelievable for the Red Sox this year. He's the favorite right now to win the Cy Young, in my view, and he had an incredible performance in a 16-inning, nearly six-hour loss by the Red Sox, 4-1 against the Yankees on Saturday. He went 7 2/3. He struck out 13. He gave up only 3 hits. I thought it was the most dominant performance of the year. And he talked about the atmosphere for the game and whether or not it was his best start of the season. He gave the ball to Craig Kimbrell in the eighth, and here's Chris Sale.
Playing the Yankees at Fenway Park. Played a great game last night, feeding off of that. I'll say this, the last two games here have been probably the funnest two games I've ever been a part of. I mean, the energy in the ball, in the ballpark, the fans have really come alive. So as players, we appreciate that. We feel that. We hear them. So yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's hard not to get hyped up when you're playing a division rival and, you know, a packed house going crazy.
Have you noticed a little extra energy each time you pitch? Kind of like it's an event here when you come to the mound. Have you noticed that kind of the course of the season?
I don't know if I've noticed it. I know I really like pitching here in front of the home crowd. And like I said, the last 2 days have been off the charts, but that's not saying that the season hasn't been great so far. So we got passionate fans here, and they know their baseball, and it's fun to play in front of them.
Do you feel like this was your best start of the year?
It's hard to say, you know, especially when you're not on the winning side of things. It was a long game. I can't say enough about my guys out there. We're 16 innings, that's a long time. The bullpen did an unbelievable job. I mean, we absolutely taxed them tonight, and I think they answered the bell pretty damn well.
What was the conversation like with Carl about going back out to the eighth inning? Did you expect to go back out for the eighth, or how did you feel coming off down after the seventh?
I mean, I always expect to go back out there. He just came up, asked how I was feeling. I told him I was good, and he said, all right, going back out. So,
all right, Chris Sale right there. As I mentioned before, I mean, this is a team which has been very good defensively this year, and the starting pitching, relief pitching, is what's gotten them to this point. The offense is still looking for, you know, significant contributions where this team just rides the offense for a period of 10 or 15 games. Jackie Bradley Jr. joins us now on the program. He made an absolutely fabulous catch in the eighth inning, going out of the triangle, timing the jump perfectly. Aaron Judge had just hit a bomb to straightaway center, and he went over, he timed the jump, he made an incredible catch, which kept it a shutout and kept the Red Sox in the driver's seat for a 3-0 victory. It would have been a solo home run if Jackie Bradley Jr. did not bring it back. Here's my conversation with JBJ.
Joined by Jackie Bradley Jr. here at Fenway Park as the Red Sox continue to impress here to start the second half of the season. Winners of 10 of their last 15 games. Still feels like, despite the type of baseball you guys are playing, that this team still has another gear. Is that the way you guys are approaching things as well?
We definitely feel like we can play better baseball. You know, right now where we are, you know, we're proud of where we are, but we know that we still have a long ways to go, and we're ready to work towards that.
I look at this team, and, you know, the identity team last year was one of obviously a team that had tremendous offense, could hit up and down the lineup, and this team still can. But it seems that this team this year is more about, you know, the pitching side of things, the defensive side of things, which may lend itself better, you know, to the postseason. Do you see it that way as well, or is the offense going to be there, just hasn't gotten to the level of kind of greatness that the pitching and the defense are at?
I think we're a very well-rounded team.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're going to be that offense that's going to break out when we need to. And obviously, like you said, our pitching and our defense has been very solid this year. And I guess from an overall standpoint, I feel like our offense has been as well. But we all know that we can play better. And, you know, we're excited to go through that very positive streak to get us going.
You've hit really well against lefties this year. Was that a point of emphasis for you going into the season, or is it just one of those things where it's gotten better?
I just try to make it a point to try to hit against everybody. You know, you know, obviously, I possibly could focus more heavily on lefties. I might try to bear down a little bit more, but, you know, just because you rarely get to see them, so you definitely want to, you know, have a competitive at bat. And but I think it's just been one of those things where things have just been that way.
When you welcome new guys into this clubhouse, and Lynn, you know, is a great example as of late, a young kid who's come up and obviously performed really, really well, you know, with the team, it seems like there's kind of a natural progression for young players who come into the Sox clubhouse really over a long period of time that seem to feel comfortable in the spotlight here and having success. Why do you think that is, and what type of environment do you think is created for those guys to have success?
I think we just have a great veteran leadership. We have guys that, you know, make guys feel comfortable, like they're part of the team right away.
Yeah.
I mean, you come up here, you're family. And I think they feel that, and it just makes them feel comfortable. And that way they can just go out there and just perform and do what they've normally been doing.
Is that one thing that you take upon yourself as well? Because I guess it's kind of your nature. You are always a very welcoming, friendly type of guy. But is that one thing that, you know, kind of you reach out and look to the younger guys as well as you become more of a veteran player and establish, you know, a relationship with guys who may be a little bit leery about what the big leagues are about?
I just think just being there. Yeah. That's what it all boils down to. When in need, you know, someone's asking you a question, just being there to be able to lend that helping hand. People really appreciate that. And I know I appreciated that when I was a younger player. So I'm sure they do as well, just because, you know, sometimes they're not used to this environment and the things that entails of being a big leaguer with, you know, time management and stuff like that. So there's not many things that you're going to say no to, but, you know, sometimes in order for them to, you know, slow things down, they have to be able to focus on themselves and getting their work.
Welcome back. You're on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan at Fenway Park, where the Sox homestand continues here against the Toronto Blue Jays for four games, wrapping up on Thursday afternoon. The team heads out west to Anaheim and Seattle before coming back to take on the Royals and the Indians. The Indian series will be a lot of fun. Three games to begin the month of August. So that'll be fun here at Fenway Park. At the Hampshire Motor Speedway in Loudon, there was a lot of fun for Denny Hamlin as he won the Overton 301, holding off Kyle Larson late in that race. And I talked to Denny Hamlin in victory lane. Hamlin, one of now only 25 drivers in NASCAR history to win 30 races. Here's my conversation with Denny.
Denny Hamlin here in a victory lane, wins at New Hampshire Motor Speedway in Loudon. Congratulations, first off. And talk about holding off Kyle Larson there at the end. He had a great car all day. What was the key to that?
Yeah, definitely was the key. We did a lot of good things all race. You know, we held off those guys. We got a big gap at the end and was able to hold them off. But we executed on pit road. We got a backup car in victory lane. That was really important.
It seemed like it was a team victory. Obviously, you had the driving aspect of things, but you mentioned the pit road aspect. You had a tire changer who was subbed in. And this really seems like one of the big team victories.
Yeah, it is. First victory for Gibbs this season. So we're definitely ecstatic about this finish, and hopefully we can build on it for the rest of the season.
In terms of the playoff aspect of things, how big was this to kind of get your team moving in the right direction?
It was big. We definitely needed all of it. I still think that we got some, you know, work to do here and there, but overall pretty happy with, you know, where we're heading and the direction our team's heading throughout the year.
All right, Denny right there, able to hold off Kyle Larson. Larson had a really good car, and I talked with him about if he thought he's been able to pull it off late.
Everyone talks about how difficult it is to get through the field here and to pass. What allowed you to, you know, get all the way to 10th and in basically 29 laps?
Just a good car. Can I get that towel? Just a really good car, and I was able to kind of cruise, you know, cut across the bottom and beat people on exit.
Did you think you had a shot at Denny at the end?
Yeah, for sure. I was catching him at a pretty good pace and just ran out of time.
Kyle Larson right there. Also caught up with Joe Gibbs, who is the owner of Denny Hamlin's car, also three-time Super Bowl champion head coach of the Washington Redskins.
Coach Joe Gibbs with us here in victory lane. Denny Hamlin takes the checkered flag here. And obviously it's been a while since you've been in victory lane this year, but really victory lane in New Hampshire is a familiar place for you guys.
Well, we love the racetrack here. A number of our guys have won here. I thought today, you know, Denny just did a terrific job in a backup car. I felt like Kyle obviously could have won. Matt could have won. And then Daniel had his highest finish ever, sixth. So it's a big day for us. Hopefully it puts us in with some momentum. And it's towards the end of the season, getting ready for the playoffs. And hopefully this is going to carry us some.
Yeah, it seemed like Kyle and Truex might have had the best cars, like Kyle Larson, that is. But Denny was able to win because of the team, it seemed like. And also, you know, his driving as well, where he made really good job down the stretch. Kyle made a couple key mistakes going through lap traffic.
Yeah, I think all our cars were strong and had a chance. But I will say this. Denny, if you pick a racetrack that he would like to be at to try and win, it's here. and he has a good history here, and I felt like he's pretty fast at the end there.
Why do you think he does so well here in Hampshire?
I don't know. You know, I've always wondered with drivers why some of them have favorites. They have other tracks they don't like particularly, and it's always kind of mystified me because they're so good at everything they do. It's just they got favorites and they got places they don't particularly think they're good at.
Denny's always been a guy who's been around the championship, and he obviously needed this win moving forward to project himself towards that this year. Do you feel like he's the guy that has the ability to do that and has just, you know, been a little off in previous years?
I think Denny is capable of winning a championship. His style, he doesn't make mistakes, and he's been close twice. And so, you know, it's so hard to do, but you know, I like his chances because I think he is really good down the stretch at those racetracks.
Joe Gibbs right there, and also started the conversation, I don't know if I started the conversation, but continued the conversation about whether or not Jimmy Johnson is the greatest NASCAR driver of all time. I talked to Jimmy Johnson about that at the track.
Great to be joined by Jimmy Johnson, seven-time NASCAR champion here at the New Hampshire Motor Speedway in Loudoun. And first off, just on the seven championships and the success you've had late in your career, how have you been able to do that and kind of expand as a driver and become an even better driver as you've gotten through the course of your career?
Well, experience plays such a key role in our sport. You know, Petty and Earnhardt both won in their 40s, won championships, that is, and guys like Junior Johnson wouldn't even take a driver when he was a car owner until they're in the 30s, maybe even 35, if memory serves me right. So I'm fortunate as an athlete to compete in a sport where experience, you can stay in it long enough where your experience will outweigh that youthful energy at times. So, and then from that standpoint, I stay really active and physically fit to try to cover that base as well. But experience for myself, for this team, driving at a place like Hendrick Motorsports that has so much history and experience makes all the difference in the world.
Do you feel like you're the greatest of all time at this point, or do you look at it as there's different generations of NASCAR, and you're the best, obviously, of this time period, but the championships speak for themselves, I think, and you look at the environment that you've won them in.
You know, the stats, you know, can develop opinions either way. I've never set out, you know, my own personal goal to be the best driver. I've just loved racing.
Right.
And it's really hard for me to look at myself in that light, and to even read or hear or see things that position me in that. I'm very proud of what I've accomplished, but you know, I've never spent much time, you know, kind of thinking about where I place and all that, but the stats are certainly adding up.
You're at a breakfast here for Speedway Children's Charities. One of the topics that came up was Dave McGrath has mentioned the fact that perhaps expanding the track and getting more grooves and making the raceway better for passing here in New Hampshire and perhaps other places. And that seems like a real good fit for NASCAR, as opposed to, you know, when you change the formula and the data and all that, the fans can sometimes get confused. But if you have more passing, so more exciting racing, it seems like that's probably the best thing NASCAR could do.
Yeah, there's a lot going on that NASCAR is trying to focus on, and through trying to create an equal playing ground or equal field for manufacturers and teams, you know, we've created so much parity that it's difficult to pass.
Right.
So, you know, then you look at the tracks, and I think right now it's easier to worry about putting down some kind of traction compound and creating multiple lanes than it is to say, all right, Loudoun, you know, New Hampshire Speedway, let's do a reconfiguration and cost you however many tens of millions of dollars in order to do that. And, you know, we have a product that we're using today, and I'm excited to see more tracks willing to put it down, because I think it might not be the best thing now, but it's working well, but it will help us develop the next product that comes out that works.
In concluding, we mentioned the parity and the fact that there is so much similar about the teams, but your team continues to have success. What separates you guys, particularly a track like New Hampshire, where, as you referenced, it is difficult to pass and a lot of it is strategy and so forth. What separates you guys from other race teams, and what will allow for you to have success on Sunday?
Well, we're a great company, big company with a lot of history, a lot of experience, a lot of notes to pull from. But, you know, today's world with stage racing and all of it, it's so unpredictable, you know, and we could count on, you know, being at Hendrick Motorsports in years past and different generations of cars to always help us, you know, have a distinct advantage, but those days are changing. The parity is so much in the sport that you can't just say that one team or driver has everything working for them.
Jimmy, thanks a lot.
Yep, thank you.
He is tied with Richard Petty for seven NASCAR championships, and most people consider either Johnson, Petty, or Dale Earnhardt to be the greatest drivers ever. hear the thoughts of Richard Petty inside the garage area at the Hampshire Motor Speedway.
There's no such thing as the greatest driver ever, because everybody comes along at a different time, and they don't compete against each other. He never competed really against Earnhardt, never competed against David Pearson. Of course, they didn't compete against him either. So he might be the best of the lot right now, but there's no such thing as the fastest gun.
So you think you got to go based upon time periods. He's the best driver now, but he didn't race under the same conditions that you raced under, and obviously Dale, right, you know, raced it under different conditions. So you break it basically like baseball players do. You break it down based upon, you know, generations, yeah, as compared to.
Yeah. In other words, he's running against how many people that's won, you know, 50 or 80 races. He's not. You know, Pearson, myself, Allison, we race against people who run 60 and 70 races in their career. So he's not racing against anybody, well, a bunch of people that's won a bunch of races. Okay? He's won a bunch, but the next guy down that's running has probably won, what, 30 races? You know what I mean? And that's not even, that don't even get you on the blimp sheet when you're talking about 90 or 100, you know what I mean?
How do you think you would have done, having, you know, the technology and everything that these guys have today? How much more difficult was it to race in your day, or was it better to race in your day than now?
Again, it's a different world. If I had grown up in this society, or if Jimmy Johnson had grown up in my society or my years, then he would have still been good. It wouldn't, you know what I mean?
Right.
Okay? And I feel like I would have been decent if I'd have grew up in his society, because you would be modernized with everything that's going on now. But to take me out of 50 years ago and put me in a car today, or take Jimmy out and put him 50 years back, they don't work that way.
All right, that is Richard Petty here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. Appreciate you joining us for the show. That's going to do it for today. We have a great one for you next week. More from the track, as we will bring you interviews with a couple of Bruins and also Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator for the Patriots. We'll get that all in on the show next week. Appreciate you joining us for The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show presented by the Prescription Center.